Welcome back to my channel. Wendy Renee here. It has been a minute, I know, but we're back and we're going to finish out the season with some amazing interviews. Today we're talking to my friend Anthony Forte. Anthony comes to us from the World Mission Society of God. Sounds like a cult, but what do I know? For those of you who don't know me, my name is Wendy and I was a JW. Jehovah's Witness for well over 30 years, and I walked away from it. It's not easy, but it's possible. And if you're here and you're new and you're just waking up and you feel kind of upside down and things feel kind of messy right now, it's okay. It's going to feel messy, but you know what? You're going to be okay. That's why we're here. We've formed this really interesting and loving community in the comments section. And if you want to support the channel, just like, share, subscribe. That would be really helpful to get into the algorithm. I don't have a Patreon. I never will. I personally don't see the point in doing that. I volunteered to do this. I have a full-time day job and I'm also have a second job of being a mom. So I'm just a mom who had a camera and that's how and why I do this. But thank you so much for being here. If you're listening on the podcast, thank you so much. If you're watching this and my camera is bouncing back and forth, something happened with the focus. I don't know what I hit, but I'm sorry if it keeps focusing in and out. I gotta work on that, but I didn't have time to fiddle with it because I have this new guest. So I hope you enjoy it. Anthony, thank you so much for coming on the channel. I mean, I'm excited in a weird way to hear about this cult I have no familiarity with. So why don't you let us know what brought you here and where you came from?
Well, I am a former member of the World Mission Society, Church of God, which is kind of parallels, I guess, in a lot of ways with the Shincheonji Church, another Korean origin church. What brought me in originally to the the channel is actually between that church and my church. We have some people who have both left and we've connected with each other. And I was introduced to your channel and as a great way to kind of share the message of, you know, what I experienced while in the church and just kind of let people know about what the church is about and, you know, the sort of damage it could do in your life and then just kind of the healing process afterward.
Thank you. You know, you mentioned before we started recording that when we first wake up, we think our stories are unique. And then we start listening to other people from other religions and we're like, wait a minute, I'm not the only one. This has nothing to do with lack of faith or whatever they want me to think. There's nothing wrong with me, actually. So were you born in this religion?
No, they preached to me on the streets of the time I was living in New York City. And it was the 4th of July. I was just on my way to my friend's house and somewhere in Astoria, Queens, on a highway overpass, two people came up to me and they were asking me if I've ever heard of God the Mother, which is like the core teaching of this church. And, you know, I wasn't really that interested in the Bible or anything like that, but, you know, I thought it was a really interesting topic. So I gave them a little bit of time and before long, I said, yeah, I'll meet you for a Bible study. And, you know, that's how it all began. So this was back in 2011. And at the time when I was, you know, listening to what they had to say, you know, the first day they wanted me immediately to hop in a car with them and drive out to some random town I never heard of. I'm like, I'm not.
Oh, that's, you know, not weird.
Very aggressive.
That's not weird at all.
So I'm like, I'll meet you in 2 days after work at a Starbucks. And then sure enough, we did one Bible study and it was about science and history and how the Bible doesn't go against it. It actually goes with it. And I thought it was such an interesting topic that after, you know, that one Bible study, they're like, now will you hop in our car? And I'm like, yeah, I'll hop in the car with strangers. And we end up going to this church, maybe like a 20-minute drive from where we were. And from there, we did another Bible study, and immediately they asked me to be baptized.
Immediately? Wow.
Yeah. So
Before this point, though, did you have any religious background or upbringing? Or because something about that question, God the Mother, something that was a hook for you somehow?
So I grew up in, my parents had both left the Catholic Church right before I was born, mm-hmm. and they joined a Pentecostal church, mm-hmm. which it wasn't until this experience and I look back that I realized that even that church was a little culty. Mm-hmm. You know, the sort of like they I remember as a kid, they did like an assessment of our house. They went around and, oh, these are playing cards. No, these are the devil. Oh, you can't watch The Simpsons and like all of these, you know, wow. crazy rules and things like that. But I was in it only for a little bit. By the time I was in high school, everyone had just stopped going to church. And, mm-hmm. you know, for me, I was open to the idea, but I wasn't going to church actively or, you know, almost at all. So when I heard about the God, the Mother concept, for me, it was just kind of interesting because, one, it's a new take. You know, I never really thought of it before. There was a song in the 90s from Dishwalla where there is like the chorus where it was like, I want to see her, you yes. know, talking to God.
And I remember that because that was a JW. That was a contraband song. Like, you don't, like,
oh,
no, you do not listen to that whatsoever. But yeah, I remember that. Yep.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, you know, and then like I was in a philosophy class in college and, you know, they talked about how like God created everything from nothing. And I'm like, well, that sounds more of like a feminine attribute than a masculine. So the whole concept for me was like, I'm interested. I don't believe in, you know, anything just yet, but I want to hear about it because I was like, I think thirsting for like education, thirsting for some sort of like academic in my life. So, you know, I went with them and it was, you know, the first day I'd never been baptized in my life. And they were like, would you like to be baptized? You know, because if you take this baptism, you could, you know, receive something called the temporary Passover. Because in this church, what they believed in is all the Old Testament feasts. So, you know, Passover, unleavened bread, you know, first fruits, all the stuff from Leviticus 23 was like a big part of what this church believed. So, you know, they say Passover is the way of salvation. So, you know, I was really confused that because it seemed very quick, but, you know, I was in a setting and I asked like, what does it mean? What happens if I'm baptized? And they just say, oh, you get a little wet. Next thing I know, they're bringing me into a room and telling me to remove all of my clothes, put on a robe, and then they'll come in and completely, you know, submerge me by like pouring water all over. And, you know, I felt like a little deceived by that. You know, I thought it was going to be some simple, quick thing, but it ended up being a lot more involved. And, you know, I felt like it was a little deceptive the way that they explained it to me. But, you know, I was already in the next room. People were all around me. You know, I already said, yes, I was going to do this. And now I just felt like, well, how weird would I look if I just walked away or said, no, 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 this isn't what I agreed to. You know, I just felt like this peer pressure. And I didn't notice at the time when they were baptizing me, but they baptized me under the name Jehovah, Jesus, and Ahnsong Hong. Ahnsong Hong is who I later discovered in my time there, they believe is the second coming of Jesus, who had come in 1948 during the Israel becoming a nation again. So they have, after that, like a course of Bible studies that they put me through, starting with like learning about the law. This is what you need for salvation. If you don't keep these things that only we keep, then you can't go to the kingdom of heaven. And then it became, you know, let me show you who Satan is on this earth. It's the Catholic Church and all the Protestant churches. And then it became, here's who we believe is the second coming of Jesus. He gave us all of this truth. And now this is God the Mother who has come to the earth. And now we must believe in her to receive life. So there's a whole like system of education. And the last study, they teach you to go out and preach. Like, you have to constantly be preaching. Go out to the streets, whether you're alone or like paired up, and just constantly try to recruit. So that's kind of like how the church brought me in and kind of kept me there. And then they also started to tell me about the end of the world that was coming in 1 year from when I had joined.
I was just going to ask if they started to talk to you about any kind of doomsday, if that's what can hold you as well, without a purpose or giving you a purpose. They can't really hold you unless you're striving for something within, unless they get that emotional control. But you came in as an adult, which is always fascinating to me. And so I was wondering, if they started with the doomsday, then that they started to invoke fear.
Well, I mean, they start with doomsday with a lot of people, because they say that the earth, we have three different ages: an age of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. We're in the final age, the age of the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. And that in this age, we have to, if we can't be saved by Jehovah, we can't be saved by Jesus, we have to be saved by this name, Ahnsahn Hom. So the story behind it, there's two different stories. There's a story that they teach you, and then there's the true story about how the church had its origin. I think that the Jehovah Witnesses also kind of were a spinoff of the Millerite movement. Do you ever hear about the Millerites?
No.
I know that there's a lot of different denominations that have come out of this movement, where a man from like 1831 to 1844 was proclaiming the end of the world in 1844. It culminated in something called the Great Disappointment, where like all these people, they were leaving their jobs and doing all this stuff, and you know, because they believed that Jesus was going to appear in 1844. Mm-hmm. And then he didn't. And you know, after that, I know that the Seventh-day Adventists spun off of that. Mm-hmm. After the Seventh-day Adventist church, a man named Ahnsahn Hom had joined that church and was baptized there. And then he left and he started his own church. In his church, he started to teach about how we need not just the Sabbath day, but the Passover, all these different things. He also taught that before we came to this earth, we were angels in heaven and we sinned. And that's why we're on this earth, as a last chance. So the pre-existence is kind of Mormon. He also taught that the just like the Seventh-day Adventist Church, that the Catholic Church and all their teachings are of the devil to confuse people.
Wow.
And all the Protestant churches are just a continuation of confusion, that, you know, he's the only one who came with the true message of salvation.
Wow. And they use the Bible? Did they use the Bible with this?
They did use the Bible. They wow. What they do is a lot of the cherry pick. Is it what a lot of people use, where like a verse here, like out of context, another verse there out of context, and they build, like, you know, they weave it together with a lot of transitions in between. And then there's always a lot of like symbolism, like the cloud doesn't mean cloud, it means the flesh. Mm-hmm. You know, and so Jesus comes on the cloud, no, he comes in the flesh, mm-hmm. like a normal human being. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a lot of different, like, they'll use a word and then they'll find the same word used in like a poetic way or like in a symbolic way somewhere else in the Bible, and they'll use that to kind of tell their tale.
Yeah, like whatever makes sense at that moment, for sure. I remember I gave a talk, and Jehovah's Witnesses women, they're not allowed to speak directly to the congregation, but they give talks where they talk to each other. It's kind of like a mock conversation. It's a stupid mm-hmm. thing about, but I gave a talk on Jesus coming in the cloud, and all the research I did, still don't get it. I still have no idea what I said. I don't even know what it really means to this day. It's interesting that was something that they used for you to just change it entirely.
Oh yeah. So, after this, this man, he died in 1985. Mm. And after him, the church split. His son and his wife and his, you know, they went and they continued on one church. But then there was a member who was named Jul Chul Kim, mm-hmm. and a woman named Zangil Ja. They started to say, oh, this woman is actually his spiritual wife, and she is God the Mother. And they continued on and they said, oh, look, they took a picture together. And she was wearing a wedding dress. And that means that he's the groom and she's the bride. The bride in Revelation coming down from heaven. She's here for our salvation. You know, just like human beings, you can't have life without a mother. Spiritually, you need God the mother to have spiritual life too.
Wow.
So this is like, now everybody worships this woman as God on earth.
This is so crazy to me, because the woman in Revelation to Jehovah's Witnesses is God's chosen members of the anointed class. Only Jehovah's Witnesses. That's the bride. They're called the bride class, and they're going to be married to Jesus in the new system, ruling over heaven. Correct me, Jehovah's Witnesses, because my prophecy is a little it's a little cloudy. Well, but oh my God.
Yeah. So you know, the whole time we would see this woman, and like, you know, we believe that she came from heaven. She remembers heaven. We on earth, we have this sinful flesh. We can't remember our time in heaven.
Oh.
We can't remember because we're here because we tried to murder her in heaven.
Oh.
And now she's here to give us her heart and her blood so that, you know, we can be forgiven and be made into gods in the kingdom of heaven. If we can become so perfect that we're the 144,000. If we can't be 144,000, then maybe we'll be part of the great multitude that goes to heaven.
Yes.
But you know, you're not going to have the ability of creation like, you know, you would if you're 144,000. You'll have to die when the atomic bomb goes off. But the 144,000, they'll be transfigured and going up to heaven without ever seeing death. That's the teaching of the church. So like, you always have to fight to become, because, you know, as the church, you know, grew and grew and grew, you know, 144,000 became a lot more, you know, small of a percentage. So you became even more competitive for having to, you know, be the elite of the church.
So anybody could be 144,000 at that point?
Anybody.
Older men could be, you had to be like, I think because they said that the end of the day started in 1914. So anybody who is under the age of like 70, I want to say, but this was like in the 90s.
Yeah.
There, you could only be old and gray haired to be part of the anointed. What?
So one of the interesting things though about like their teaching. So the 144,000, it's not like people like Peter or anyone like that. They're not 144,000. We have to have better faith in this last age because you have to be there for the last day for you to be 144,000.
Mm-hmm.
They were also teaching that, you know, this woman will be with us, the 144,000, when we transfigure and we go up to heaven with her. They started to ease back on that teaching and gaslight it because she's 80 now. And so they're talking less about the 144,000 and less about her coming together with them to go up to heaven alive. So, you know, I think that they're slowly preparing for the fact that if they want longevity in the church, they're going to have to gaslight a lot about what they used to teach.
Mm-hmm.
The 144,000 were supposed to sing a new song that only they could know. So their hymnal book, they called it New Songs. So the new songs, the hymnals that they used to sing spoke about going to heaven alive with her alive. And now they took all of them and they burned them. They took all these old hymnal books and they burned them and gave us new editions. Or I mean, charged us for new editions that no longer reference 144,000 or going to heaven alive with her. So, you know, they're moving their teaching a little bit in different directions as they see fit, preparing for what's ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But they've had doomsday prophecies. The first one that the church had was for 1988, and that didn't happen. But they said that the reason why it didn't happen is like Jonah's prophecy, where God said he was going to destroy the city, and then he didn't destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
Another one was in year 2000, but I wasn't there for that one either, but I was there for the prophecy about 2012. And it was basically the world was supposed to end in that year. That's what they told us. In that year, they started to speak a little bit less about it. And then after that year, it was a lot of gaslighting. It was really a difficult time for us to understand because, you know, the first thing that they said was, well, the sacred calendar doesn't, you know, conclude until March. So we're like, okay, maybe we just have to wait till like 2 weeks before the Passover or something like that for us to go to heaven. And then as you know, it continued, it's like, well, now that, you know, everything's completed, it's like a building. A building's been built, but you can't just go into the building. You need the inspector to come. The inspector needs to make sure everything is proper and in place. And, you know, so they went through like all these different things. And oh, if you're only thinking about times and dates, and you're not worthy of the kingdom of heaven. So they kept on like putting it on us, like, you know, we weren't ready, you know, the inspection's not done, you know, you need to become 100%. This is the time of God's mercy. You know, it was supposed to happen, but now you have to fix it. So it was such a like an awful like gaslighting experience. Wow. And it was so strange too, because we were all wishing for the world to blow up. You know, it was a really strange way to live. So that was kind of like a little bit about the like the church history and their beliefs and doctrines.
I got to admit, I didn't realize it while I was in, but Jehovah's Witnesses do the exact same thing. When we're praying for the end of this system of things, we're praying for everybody to die. We're praying for everybody to just be destroyed who doesn't believe what we believe. And it never registered until I woke up like, oh yeah, you know, I want a paradise earth, but in order to get there, God's got to murder a billions of people. Okay, sign me up. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, it was really strange because they would talk about this stuff. And like, sometimes I would be like the caretaker after like a new member, you know, like, and they're like, are you guys wishing that the world's going to end? And it was kind of like, we want our souls to go home. That's
like, or we don't really word it that way. We have more of a, that's a negative way to look at it. You know, they would flip it somehow. Wow. So how long were you in this religion for? You got baptized on day one.
So. Yeah. So I was baptized in July of 2011. And then I left in December of 2021.
Wow. So fairly recent then. Okay. And what did that look like for you? What happened?
Well, one of the things that the church does is they have arranged marriages. So
really?
About a year in to the, maybe a year and a half in, the pastor sat me down and he said, you know, you're at the age where you should be thinking about a family. Why don't you marry this one? And I'm like, excuse me? you know, because I had heard about it, but I didn't really know that it was true. And then I'm like, oh, okay. He said, why, you like somebody else? And like, I didn't know how to answer that question. So I'm like, let me think about it and I'll get, you know, back to you. And I asked the deacon, hey, he asked me about this. Is it a trick? Like, what is he trying to do? Like, I don't understand what's happening. And he's like, well, look around. Who would you want to marry? You know, this is a blessing. You know, you could do a lot more for the church if you're married. So I'm like, okay, well, it's, you know, the middle of 2012 and the world's about to end this year. So I'll go for who he suggested. And, you know, you're telling me I could get more blessings, you know, and I could do more for the church and I need to do as much as possible if I want to be 144,000. So yeah, open up the blessings for me. I'll get married. Well, you know, 9 years into marriage. And now I'm thinking about leaving. And, you know, I built a life with this other person whose emotions and like, I can't just walk away and just be done with it. On top of that, you know, I became a deacon. I was baptizing people. I was, you know, leading a church. I was doing all these things. And, you know, like to walk away was a very difficult decision because at this point they moved me from state to state. I was away from my family. You know, I had no friends in the world, just the church members. And to leave, like, I felt like Well, I'm in a new state. I have no friends around. Even the friends I did have, I haven't spoke to them in years. My family's all in another state. Like, if I leave, I'm going to be alone. I'm going from a time where I'm with people every single day until like midnight. Every day I'm at the church. Literally every single day I'm there. And, you know, you go out preaching with these people and you face that rejection with them, and you come back and you cook together and you eat together and you laugh together and you have this like bond. And then all of a sudden,
it's gone.
If I walk away, they will never talk to me again.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So it wasn't an easy decision, because my whole life was going to turn upside down and I was going to be alone. And, you know, my wife, after I said I wasn't going to go back, it was a really like tricky, difficult conversation, but she said she wanted to work it out. She wanted to, you know, but she wanted to have me live as if I were in the church. Like, I couldn't do what I wanted to do. I had to live with her like I lived before. You know, like
physically and mentally out is what JWs are referred to as.
Yeah, and I needed to be out. I really needed to get out. And, you know, I couldn't do anything, you know. Just like the JW, like there was no Thanksgiving, no Christmas, no.
Wow, really?
All those celebrations, you know, no cross, like a lot of those things we also had, those restrictions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I miss all the weddings and all the funerals and everything like that, because everything happens on a Saturday. And we were always at the church from morning to night. You know, the first service, you know, started at 9, so we had to be there at like 8, and then we wouldn't leave till like midnight. So I couldn't go to a wedding. I couldn't do anything. And with all these severed relationships, you know, it was just, I was walking out into oblivion. And, you know, they teach you, you leave, you're going to be in a car accident, you're going to get cancer, you're going to, like, terrible things will come to you. You'll be demon possessed, you know, you'll start to live a crazy life and everything will go bad. You become mentally ill, like all these things, all these fears, you know, they put inside me. They told me that I had the seal of God inside of the church. But if I left, God's protection over me, God's going to be done with me. So,
yeah.
It was definitely.
Just take me back a minute, though. I'm curious. You're a deacon. What was the kicker for you? What started your wake up process? What happened? Because you said when you started out, you were thirsting for knowledge. You loved to learn, and then here you are. So what was the light bulb moment?
Well, I really, really believed, and I was teaching. Mm-hmm. I really believed the doctrine. I gave up everything for it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people will say that you leave, you never believed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's not true. Like, I really, really, with all my heart and soul, I believed this, you know, and I would have given up anything. I did give up everything, you know, like, I put my career, like, on hold. I did, like, everything for the church. And after some time during 2020, during COVID, I was able to, my sister, she was going through like some tough times in her life. So I'd call her and we'd have conversations, and little by little, I kind of started to feel like myself. And then another thing was, I used that time because now we couldn't meet at the church. So I'm saving on, you know, commuting time, you know, even though we had Zoom meetings, like, forever,
right? You know, these times to yourself.
But I was, you know, I was sitting there reading what they call the truth books, which are books written by An Sung Hong. But mm-hmm. I was also trying to say, because they do like studies that involve history, I'm like, okay, let me get a little bit more understanding about what happened in history. I started to see that what they taught occurred in order to fit their doctrine isn't what happened in history. So, like, I was, you know, they say that, you know, the 666 is something called Vicarius Filii Dei, a title of the Pope that he gets in a crown. Mm-hmm. That's not true. That's never been like the title of the Pope. And every Pope has a different crown. They say that, you know, 1,260 days means years. From 538 to 1798, the French Revolution, the fall of Ostrogoths to, you know, like they're teaching these things in history. This is what happened and this is how it was fulfilled. Well, I found out that Ostrogoths, this nation, didn't fall until like 554. This was they stole this teaching from the Seventh-day Adventists, and they even admit they got the stuff wrong. And, you know, they talked about the Millerite movement. They say that there was a 10-day fulfillment, but it wasn't 10 days, or, well, 10 years, it was 14 years. So everything didn't match up, like they said. And these are things that were crucial to their prophecies in order to prove the church to be true. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then I started to see that Leah Remini, I think that's her name, mm-hmm. This ex-Scientologist actress.
Right.
In her experiences, I'm like, oh, that sounds too familiar. And then I started to watch videos from ex-Mormons and ex-Jehovah Witnesses. I think there's somebody named like Telltale or something like that who talks about.
Oh yeah,
about,
he's great. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he draws little pictures and
yeah.
So I started listening to things like that, and it really it started me to realize that this church is a lot like those churches' experiences, and I realized I'm not smarter than, you know, all these other people. I'm not more special. I'm not, you know, but they believe in something. They believe it wholeheartedly. And why? And, you know, we were told if we go to another church, all other churches are filled with demons. You walk in and demons are going to jump inside you. So you can't go to another church.
Yes. Yes.
But
if we were to go to like a funeral or a wedding or something, we could never step foot into another church. Like never.
Yeah. Only if there was like a member who had like really low faith, they make, different rules for different people. Uh-huh. But there would be like, if they do a prayer, you walk out.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
You walk out of the funeral, walk out of the wedding. Like it was like, that was the way that it would be done. But ultimately it was like, they'd say, according to your faith, you know, which is their way to...
Wow, so they would put that on you then. How did you know when, how does one know they're anointed?
What do you mean anointed? Because we use the word anointing symbolically for baptism.
Oh, okay. In JW's, anointing means you know you're going to heaven as opposed to life forever on earth. Yeah. There's two different classes of people, like an airplane, right? First class, you're going to heaven and you're going to rule with Jesus over the earth. The great crowd, which no man is able to number, we're not going to heaven, but we're going to live on earth under the rule of the anointed. And the rule is like, you don't ask someone how they know they're anointed. They just know. That's it. There's no proof. There's no, I'm anointed. How do you know? Well, have you ever been to a wedding? If you have to question if you're the bride, you're not the bride. Okay, so that's how they know. We bought it, hook, line, and sinker. They say they're anointed, you just let them be anointed. And they partake at the Lord's evening meal. The blood and the bread, the anointed partake.
Yeah, so we have a sliding scale. it starts with like, first we're taught, okay, all you need to do for salvation is keep this, be baptized and keep the Passover once a year.
Okay.
And then it's like, okay, but you need to keep the Sabbath day to have your sins cleansed. But you also need the third day, which is Tuesday nights. You need that as well. And you need to tithe, and then you need to do offering, mm-hmm. and you need to do contributions. Mm-hmm. And then you need to keep all the seven feasts of God. And then you need to keep these 5 a.m. worships that we have, and you need to, then you need to come on preparation day, which is Friday night, and clean the church. And then you need to preach and you need to do bearing fruit, which is where you recruit people. Like you go out preaching, they get baptized and then they stay and they become a tithing member who wow. comes for 4 services at least. Mm-hmm. But, it's just like ever increasing. And then you can't listen to worldly music. And so it's like you never feel like you're saved.
Nope.
Because at first they tell you just do this and you're saved. And then they say, oh, law keepers, if you just keep the law, then you're not saved.
But wait, there's more. It's like a sales meeting. It's like going for that timeshare meeting. You're going to a timeshare meeting, like you're going to a meeting and then you're going to get a free weekend. Oh, easy enough. No, not, yeah. not easy. There's more. You joined a timeshare cult now.
Yeah. Get it. Yeah. So it's always like they add on and but like, it's always just a little bit more than what you're doing. Like they're not going to tell somebody who's just kind of like coming for the services, oh, you need to do that. You know, like they're going to make them do a little bit more mm-hmm. and then a little bit more. And mm-hmm. it's kind of like per person, mm-hmm. like, you know, everybody has the bar just above their head. Like
and then the gaslighting comes into where if you were to, and you telling this part of your story, the members or the hand, I don't know if you guys have like a policy book or a handbook, other members who are still believing will totally refute everything you're saying. That's not true. That's what you, yeah. because it's this indirect, it's like an indirect coercion. It's not in the policy book, but that is how things are done.
Yeah, no, it's true. I could imagine, you know, them listening to this and trying to deny, because I remember when I was in the church, mm-hmm. if I heard any criticisms, like even like the 2012, mm-hmm. like they were giving us directions that we should, like, you know, one church, we bought a generator and we've stocked it with like bottles of water and canned goods. And we were always told, have these emergency prepared things and always have one of Father's books on you. And like, mm-hmm. because it was supposedly the end of the world. Mm-hmm. And we're told like everything that's going to happen outside, and you know that, you know, we're going to be told one day no more preaching, and that was going to be the end of it. And yes. like we were told all these things, and then afterward, I was like, oh no, we never taught that. No, it was something like you just misunderstood. Like I was part of that. Like, you know, they made me believe I understood it wrong. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have to tell other people like, no, that, you know, we're only talking about salvation. We're talking, you know, we don't focus on the end of the world. We focus on salvation. And that's all we talk about. And, you know, I was a gaslighter because that's what I thought, you know, like I just followed what they did. And they always said, follow the Lamb wherever he goes. Meaning like, if all of a sudden we get brand new directions, you know, the faithful 144,000, we're going to change course. We're going to follow whatever the new direction is as it comes.
Oh, that's what I meant to ask, not anointed. Yeah. How do you know you're 144,000? There are two different things.
You don't. You never know. You never know where you stand.
Oh, you know? Man, really?
You never know.
Wow.
Like nobody can say, you know, you find out at when the atomic bombs are going off, if you transfigure at that moment and you go up to heaven alive, then good job. But if you perish, then you have to see, you know, at the, you know, the 144,000 will sit with God and they'll judge, oh, the great multitude, you go to heaven, you don't go to heaven, you know, so that's kind of like what they say is going to happen is that you die and then you get judged, you know, whether or not you can be in heaven or not.
The mental gymnastics you have.
So you can be, yeah, you know, it's just like you never feel like there's enough. And mm-hmm. there was an old teaching that it's going to be 3% of the earth's population that's going to go to heaven. Like that was one of their teachings that they had.
Okay. You know what I find fascinating about all of this?
What?
Jesus came and did away with all these rules, right? You know, for our listeners who still believe in some form of Christianity, Jesus was like, listen, my yoke is kindly, my load is light. You make the word of God invalid by your traditions. Relax. It's not that deep. That's kind of how Jesus was, right? And yet we have all these religions that are like this rule, that rule, this tithe, that tithe. Ooh, you're not going to make it. Ooh, you're so close. And Jesus, no, like, I feel like he's like, you're all wrong. All of you, whatever you're doing, stop. And I just find it so fascinating that religions now claim to be Christian. They're nothing like Jesus, like absolutely nothing like he was.
Yeah. And it's tough too, because it's not like we believed in like a ruling, like, oh, this is just prophets. We believe that our leader is God. Mm-hmm. So no matter what, like above the Bible, above everything, whatever this old lady says is, you know, Yeah, and like, you know, we really believe that she remembers heaven. So she's like, your wings will be 5 miles wide. And like, we're all just like, wow, like, that's amazing, you know?
So as you like, never ending yeah. story. Remember when when you were a kid and Sebastian saved the princess? Exactly. Sounds yeah. like, and you know, something you said was really interesting. You said, you know, you did the gaslighting too. That's what we do when we were victims. That's what narcissistic abuse is. You know, these religions, they make otherwise rational people do very irrational things. And I'm sure before you joined as a fully functioning adults, that this is completely contrary to the kind of human you were before they got their meat hooks into you.
Oh, I mean, I really tried to hold on to, mm-hmm. you know, some of my core values. You know, there were definitely things that like I wasn't comfortable with, like, you know, this church, so like, you know, there, the church is under scrutiny because it used to, not force, but coerce abortions on the females because they didn't want the women to focus on their child, but rather to preach and bring more people, and that the world's about to end, and you know, like, how dreadful it would be on the day for nursing mothers is like a line that they would use. So they didn't want, you know, do you really believe that Father's coming? Do you really believe? You know, that would be kind of the coercion that they would use. And there's lawsuits out against them right now because people have, you know, lost their children that they wow. wanted to have because of this group. But, you know, I never would insinuate something like that. Or they had things like rebuking, where you'd have to yell at somebody and put them down. Like, I never felt like, I'm not that kind of person. I don't have that in me. So I never was able to, you know, I'm not like that, you know. So
there is this question, right? And I ask this, yeah. if any believing JWs or members of your former religion are watching, my question always is, if you believe in the leadership, and listen, we're all told it's God. Right? We think we're doing what God wants, but at what point, where's the line, right? With Jehovah's Witnesses, the governing body, with your religion, it was the father, the mother, the leader. At what point does your integrity and your values overtake that? Where's the line? This is what my question is for all these people who are still in it. And honestly, I can say with full confidence, while I was on the inside, I didn't have one. I would have done whatever they told me to do. I would have drank the Kool-Aid if that was me at Joe's. Yeah. 110%. That's the scary part.
If they told me that disobedience, you have to drink poison, like, mm-hmm. I really, like, I don't doubt that I believe that much that I would have given up my life for the church.
And so you're here now and you're raising awareness about this. What did the leaving process look like? Is there shunning? Is there public announcements like in the JWs? What does that look like?
So for me, it's kind of like everything was like a little bit behind the scenes because I wasn't there to really witness it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are meetings. Sometimes they talk about people, at meetings. It's not too often you find like a leader who leaves the church,
right?
Like somebody who was leading a church, you know, like, you know, they're usually in there a bit longer, but there have been, you know, cases like that. Basically, when I was leaving, I noticed that like people just stopped responding to text messages and things like that, because, you know, like, even though I knew that they probably would, I would still try to reach out, or if I thought of them for some reason, I would send them something, but nothing. Like, and then as people were finding out I was leaving and other, cause I moved around a lot, so I had connections all over the East Coast. You know, I'd reach out to like people I was close to, and at first they would respond, but then I'm like, oh yeah, just by the way, like, I left, you know, I hope that, you know, we could still like connect and chat, you know, you mean something to me. So, and then, you know, like, yeah, of course. And then, you know, silence after that. And so I had to kind of like rebuild, and, you know, it was, you know, I ended up trying for like about a month to stay with my wife, but I realized I could never leave the church unless I left her. And, you know, really, it wasn't a marriage built on love. It was a marriage built on, we have this thing in common and we're working for the church together. And without that, you know, why deny myself to find, like, you know, real love and, you know, actual, like, relationship. So, yeah. So it was hard. It wasn't easy, but, you know, I feel like I found a community of people who had also left. And we've been able to share, like, you know, we all went through a lot of similar, you know, things with, like, nightmares or weird habits. Like, for me, I couldn't stay home. Every night I was out at the church. So every single night I had to do something, or I felt miserable. Every day, like, it just, like, I just felt like I constantly had to do something because that's what I was always doing.
Busy culture.
And it took a while for me to be able to sit down and watch TV at home.
It's real, guilt-free, right? Or on a Sunday, or, you know, if you're not secularly working, you have to be working for the church or working for the congregation, or even if you're physically not working, you have to be mentally working too. I know so many people who, when they stop going, whatever the religion is, the hardest part is relaxing. That's one of the hardest part, because you're just set in this perpetual hamster wheel of striving for something. It's kind of like corporate America, which I don't have much experience in, but I've seen a lot of people who are, that it's just, it's a rat race. You're constantly striving for something more. And religion does the same thing to you without, I think the releasing yourself of the guilt, I think the emotional control is one of the most, once you dismantle the doctrine, the emotional control seems to be one of the most difficult, because the emotions lead to behaviors. And that is where it's really a challenge. You are a deacon. So a deacon is the highest in your religion?
No. So it goes from, like, you're a member, and then you could become, like, a team leader, group leader, a deacon. And then after that, it goes into a missionary, an elder, then a pastor.
Ooh, what were you again?
So deacon? I was like, was it?
What were you, deacon?
Deacon, yeah.
Oh, you had a couple more ranks to go. I don't know.
Yeah, well, they put me in. They put me in, like, this educational course because they wanted it to become like your job, and I didn't want that. I really, like, I couldn't imagine doing that full time. Like, even when I was really in it, I just didn't feel like I could do it. And honestly, you know, I always felt like, you know how I was mentioning before, you never feel like you're good enough. I kind of felt like that. I felt like I couldn't imagine getting on the payroll. I couldn't imagine getting paid from the members to do church activities, you know? Meanwhile, like, I'm like, why am I losing faith? What am I doing wrong in my life? Like, I thought when I was losing faith and I wanted to leave, I'm like, I was assessing my life. Like, why, like, what do I have to get rid of? What am I doing that's so wrong that, like, my faith is going this way? I thought, like, you know, was it because I listened to that worldly song? Was it because I watched,
right? Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You start to do, like, the self-assessment, like, I must be doing something really bad that, you know, my God's letting go of my hand, you know, like, that's what I felt like when I was losing faith. And, you know, I had to realize that, well, maybe it's not, you know, God is losing, like, letting go of me. Maybe I'm just opening my eyes to what this church really is without, like, this false, you know, cover of making excuses for all their misdeeds. So,
yeah, there becomes this point in the deconstruction process where you realize you actually weren't the problem. It's our thinking that was the problem. And we can always change that. For the JW men who are watching this, I think your story is, well, actually most religions, it's so inspirational to see a man leave. One of the challenges that when men leave the organizations, that the titles and the ranks and the behaviors and the leadership, none of it matters outside the religion. Like, nobody, like, it's like, I have one, there's this community of former leaders in the Jehovah's Witness organization. Inside the organization, they have all these privileges, and they kind of, you know, they're at the helm, right? And then they leave, and none of that matters. You talk about losing a sense of purpose that was just given to you.
I'm so happy you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Because I look at a lot of the leadership who are on the payroll, you know, and I think that a lot of them, they have to know that this is made up, this is fake, and that old lady is not God. I know that they know, but they can't do anything because for the last however many years, this is all that they've been doing. Now they're in the church and everyone treats them like they're this prophet, like they're this, like they're God.
Yeah.
Anything that they say, they never lose an argument. Everyone reveres them. They say jump, everyone says how high. If they leave, they lose their car, they lose their money, they lose their health insurance, they lose where they're living. Everything goes, like they have nothing. And then like, what are you gonna put on your resume? You know, I was a missionary at a church and, you know, where are you gonna go? Entry level somewhere? So I can't imagine the situation that they're in, they're stuck.
That is really stuck. Look, JW, men, it's all volunteer work. Their secular life, it's not intertwined. For many it is though, like Jehovah's Witnesses stick within their own communities. So a lot of businesses are aligned. They only hire JWs. They won't hire anybody who's not a JW. So a lot of people will lose their jobs. A lot of livelihood is wrapped up in this. And then there's your self-worth. I've spoken to so many men who've left leadership positions in religion and that their identity was wrapped up in it. Just like I used to be a wife and my identity was wrapped up in being a wife of a Jehovah's Witness man. And that was what I was born and raised to believe was my purpose. There's no aspirations for women. Yeah. I don't know about your former religion, but women, there's no aspirations at all. Something you said that was really interesting when you watched the Leah Remini special, and I'm curious if this was the same way for you. When I first started waking up, I too watched her special, but I remember thinking to myself, this is oddly familiar, but that's just Scientology and they're just a little more strange. That's not JWs. We're not like that at all. Did you have a bit of a denial when you were watching it?
Oh yeah. I mean, like, you know, I mean, that wasn't the only, but then I had, I went on Facebook and I noticed that the Mormons were giving away free Bibles. So I asked a Mormon, hey, do you want to, you know, like talk sometime? And we had studies. I spoke to my Jewish friend to get connected to a rabbi to ask about some of these Old Testament things, because even though they keep these like feasts, everything that they do is weird and wrong, and they miss days and like the calculations are wrong, and you know, it's really, you know, it's all jacked up. I spoke to my friend who's a Seventh Day Adventist. I spoke to I started watching the Unification Church, you know, learning about. So I did I was on my way out for a year, I'd say.
That's how it works.
For about a year, like I was slowly, and then like it was definitely noticeable, like when I was phasing out, because one by one I started to detach from different things and, you know, show up less and, you know, start to question things a little bit more. Like, hey, why do you have audio and video recording all throughout the church? Why do you like, why this? Why, you know, like I started to question things a little bit more and realized some of the things that they were doing were mean or,
you become a human being again. Yeah. You start to look at things objectively.
Yeah.
You get your critical thinking skills back. And I don't know about you, but even to this day, I've been out 2 or 3 years and I still find myself saying, how did I not see that? Like, how did I miss that entirely? And sometimes I just have to laugh at myself. Here's my question for you.
Yeah.
What does life look like for you now that you're out and you're recovering? And COVID did a lot for people who were in high control religions because they had a chance to kind of think a bit. What does life look like for you now?
So work is going good. So I've been like focusing, you know, a bit on that. When it comes to religious, you know, things, I'm taking my time with figuring out what I want to do. I don't want to just jump into something and be baptized on the first day like I did before.
I mean,
you know, rushing into something, you know, there's probably, you know, things to be learned about that. But, you know, dating, going and making friendships, building connections, doing things that I'm interested in, going to like museums and exploring. Now I'm kind of in the Virginia, DC, Maryland area. So I go to DC quite a bit and trying, you know, new foods and meeting new people and just really like focusing on my interests and, you know, really doing a lot more connecting to family. I wasn't really too connected to them for almost the entire time I was in the church. And, you know, just kind of rebuilding those bonds. Like, it is, you know, for me, that's really what's important, is just making sure that the people in my life and my family who was there for me when I left and supported me during that difficult time, that I'm there for them too. So
what was that like for them? Because I didn't launch it yet, but there is a guest coming on the show who he gives the perspective of somebody who wasn't in the religion, but was still shunned by a believer, because they teach you anybody who's not a believer is worldly, therefore they're toxic to you. What was the perspective of your family once you left and they kind of retold the story now that you had woken up?
Well, it's kind of like this. When you're there, they teach that there's an earthly system, like an earthly family, and then there's the heavenly family. Mm-hmm. And this earth is just a shadow. So like your mom doesn't love you like Heavenly Mother loves you. Your father doesn't love you like God loves you. And right. Your siblings don't love you like your spiritual siblings sisters. In the church.
Oh,
your
brothers. Yes.
Like, so that's the real family. This is just like an imitation, just so you could kind of understand it. Mm-hmm. So when you devalue them, you know, and you separate from them because you're just focusing on what you think is your eternal family. And you forget about the family that's, you know, your blood. So it, you know, they knew something was changing with me. I was kind of like always independent and I was living, you know, on my own, away from everyone, and just going through like this individual growth process when I joined the cult. But they noticed that I changed. I became very like closed. Like I wouldn't, you know, laugh or joke or do things like I used to do. I was very reserved and very like, you know, uptight and, you know, always in a suit and always, you know, very different. Like, you know, this, I wasn't allowed to have a beard. You know, this is my rebellious
really?
Beard.
Yeah, same. JW
Maxine. So, you know, things like that. So they realized, and my sister now, she didn't know what I was going through because I didn't tell her. Like I would lie to my family when I'd speak to them because they wouldn't understand what I was doing at the church without the church looking bad. So I would lie because I was trying to protect the church's image. So I lived like this life where I couldn't be honest with anybody. And lying to them, like I just, even like that made me feel more separated from them. So the fact that I couldn't really tell them everything in my life, I was so separated. And they're so happy that I left. And, you know, now they're just saying that like, they have me back. Like I'm me again. And they're so happy that, you know, I could be myself. And, you know, now they're so mad at the church.
Of course.
Because they didn't know the abuses that were happening there and all the shame and guilting and hard labor that they forced on us, and, you know, how they would take our money and take our time. And, you know, it's now they're so mad because they see what they did, but they're just thankful that I'm back.
And it's really nice to hear a story of somebody who still has family, because so many people don't have that when you're raised in religions like that. Your entire social structure, people are losing their social structure every day just by having difference of opinion and no longer believing in it and uncovering all of the scandals that are in these very toxic organizations. One of the ways that I usually end interviews, and this is kind of, if you're watching this, you know, I do this every time. If you can go back and talk to yourself, maybe right before you woke up, if you can offer, because he's in the audience, right? You could talk to that leader in any organization and he's afraid to change his life. He's married. What would you say to him?
Honestly, it's, you know, research is not the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, like they said. Really look into what they're teaching. If you believe it so much, it should, and this is really from God, it will go without any scrutiny. It won't fall apart. You won't have to make excuses for it. So really do the research. You know, if they're using source material, see who's the author. If they're using, you know, history, look into history. You know, don't just trust everything. And, you know, that will hopefully open your eyes, because, you know, I know that it was really helpful for me to leave. So, you know, hopefully that could have made me leave earlier if I would have been more comfortable to do my own research and not be scared to get information.
I love that. I especially love the part where you said that it would stand up to scrutiny. The Jehovah's Witnesses, they called the religion the truth. Well, I'm sure you had a lot of loaded language.
Yeah, we said the truth.
They redefine words. If it's the truth, why did I always feel like I needed to defend it? It was, I would do that all the time. If they would change their policy, which it was always called New Light, like they got some bump on the head of Holy Spirit, but they're not inspired. So, oh, it's New Light and they're allowed to make mistakes. Okay, interesting. And I would make excuses for them all the time rather than just scrutinize and say, wait a minute, if I want to buy a Honda, I'm not going to go to Honda's website.
Yeah.
Stuff. So things like that, it just never occurred to me. So it sounds like that's what you're encouraging as well. We're so thankful for that.
Yeah, I'm thankful because, you know, it always feels good to be able to share about it and and let it out. So thank you for having this platform for me to be able to share about this church.
Oh, I could talk to you all day. I feel like we could talk about this all the time.
In addition to all that, I'm actively trying to spread awareness about this group. There is a great podcast that I've been on called Playing in Traffic, which is about a former deaconess and her sister who was never a member of the church, who just kind of witnessed it. They have a podcast called Playing in Traffic on Spotify. I've been on that. I've been on Great Light Studios where they speak about it as well. And I've also been, you know, looking and working on examining the WMSCOG website, which is a great source for information. And after I left, I'd go on that website and it was really helpful to get some more information from somebody who has left the church, knows what they teach, and get information about what the church hides. And, you know, the information all kind of compiled there where, you know, you wouldn't have to go hunting for it. So, you know, those things have been really helpful for me. And, you know, that's what, you know, it's so freeing to be able to be amongst other people who've had the same experience that I had. So, you know, connecting with them has been fantastic.
It is. I didn't know you before, but you do seem lighter. Isn't that an interesting feeling how that happens? You just seem a little bit more freer every single day. And they tell you that that's not going to happen. Like you mentioned, you're going to die. You're going to be on drugs. And so I've never felt healthier in my life. And would you say that that's the case for you as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's just been great to be able to relax and, you know, focus on myself and not live a life of just constant fear and guilt and pain.
Stomach aches and scared of thunderstorms and, you know, the pandemic with Jehovah's Witnesses thinking the end was coming. Oh my God. They thought that this is it. We're going to die. Yeah. I'm coming. We're coming for you. but it didn't happen.
Nope.
Anthony, thank you so much for coming on the show and for sharing your story. I would love to let all of our audiences know that anything you need to know about this particular religion, everything is in the description box. We would love to share episodes that you've been on, and we're all in this together to help people unravel this type of abuse and deconstruction. So thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much for watching. That's all we have for today. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.